Hey, what it do, world? Welcome to the Market Banter podcast, videocast, whatever we're calling it these days. You are rolling with me. I am Dion LeBowen, a financial journalist. I write the Axios Markets newsletter. I am with the happiest man in the world today. The happiest man alive.
Oh, wow.
His name is Dan Enfield. He is a New York City comedian, a working stiff. He's out there grinding, hitting the pavement, and he got his tax return back, and he's balling out the gym right now.
Wow. I mean, geez, if you wanted the key to a good podcast, find out your tax return right before the show, and wow, you're just going to it's going to be fire.
Dan has been beaming from ear to ear for about the past hour or whatever.
I know.
I'm
on cloud nine. I'm not really sure why. And this doesn't really get me anywhere. It just gets me like back to zero, I think,
which
is a great feeling.
Which is, yeah, the thing about it is you just gave an interest-free loan to the government for 12 months or however long it's been.
Right, right.
And now you're getting it back and you're not getting
really
paid.
It's my own money that I paid
back
to, but still, it's just like, you know.
Yeah. It feels good, right? Like, yeah, that money is back.
Yeah.
And I tell people, this is a good time for me to stress this point that I make to people all the time. Do not put extra money aside on your taxes, like have the government keep extra money. Take that money, and if you absolutely must give it to the government, buy U.S. government treasury bonds, which pay you money to loan to the government, so then you get paid. So for the exact same thing that you're doing now, you can get more money instead of just doing it for free, which is what I tell people all the time. Like, I don't think you did this intentionally, Dan, but some people do it intentionally, and it's like, it's the dumbest thing you can do financially. Take that money, put it in some assets that earn interest or earn a return, and then you get money with your money instead of just giving it to the government for free and then getting it back. So yeah,
absolutely.
Good time for
totally
that.
Agree.
But I'm glad you're happy. I mean, I don't think a treasury bond can buy the kind of happiness that Dan Enfield has today. So
yeah, it was great. I'm just in such a great mood, man. I'm on cloud nine, you know, doing the best money podcast, you know, in the country right now. You know, life's great.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And then that brings us to our guest talking about where to put your money. We got Greg King. He is the CEO of Osprey Funds. He is a big crypto guy, and he's opening up a new Bitcoin trust fund that folks can invest in, because we still haven't gotten that Bitcoin ETF, that's the mythical Bitcoin ETF that people have been talking about. So if you want to allocate some money to Bitcoin and you're like, oh man, how do I do that? Do I have to go buy actual Bitcoins? Do I have to sign up with one of these like sketchy exchanges? Do I have to go get on Cash App? You can actually just do it through your brokerage, and Greg King's got the solutions for you. We talk about that. I kind of poked some holes in his fund a little bit, but I think, you know, it's still, he makes the case for it. And if it's something that you want to get, you can go get that, because he's got that, and you know, it's an option for you. We also today are going to be talking a little bit about the shifting environment of central banks. We talk a lot about central banks on the show, and that's because central banks are everything to investing. If you're not following central banks, if you don't know what the Fed is doing, if you don't know what's happening with central banks, you don't know what's happening with your money, and you're losing. Like, right now, people see the NASDAQ down 2-3%. They're like, I don't understand what's going on. Central banks is what's happening. So
there you go.
We'll be talking a little bit about that. Dan, what's going on, man? Anything you want to get off your chest?
No, nothing much, man. I'm in just such a great mood. I just want to ride it out. I'm looking forward to talking to the guest. You know, anything crypto is the big buzzword these days. So it's for sure. You know, what if he's actually Satoshi Komoda? We just don't, or Satoshi Nakamoto. We don't know.
Right, we don't know. He might be. Maybe he's going to reveal that during our interview.
Right.
This could be. On that note, let's get right to it. Greg King, CEO and founder of Osprey Funds, right here on Market Banter. All right, we welcome in now Greg King. He is the founder and CEO of Osprey Funds. And he is, I think, again, I keep saying this, we got the perfect guest at the perfect time. He's here to talk Bitcoin and crypto with us. I think it's what everybody's talking about, what's on everybody's mind right now. Greg, thanks so much for being with us on Market Banter.
Hey, great to be here, Dion. Yeah, well, I got started back in 2013, actually. I can't even believe it's been almost 8 years, but I read an article about Bitcoin. I was at a conference. I was bored. I think I was scrolling through my phone, and it caught my attention. And that evening, I remember in my hotel room, just getting on my laptop, researching how to get access. I found Coinbase, who's going public soon. But they were the shop that I thought was the best spot to open an online account. So I opened an account, and by the end of the evening, I had done kind of, the ACH transfer and bought one Bitcoin. And that's where it all started, and once you
How
step, it was
much
like
was that back then? Do you
350,
remember?
something like that, $300.
Oh, wow.
$350.
And
Wow.
yeah, so I got started that way.
That, I
And
assume
I'm
you've
a HODL.
HODLed. I
I'm
assume
a
you
HODL.
HODLed the
Yes.
Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Yeah. All
What's
right. So you're
HODLing?
doing
I don't know HODLing. What's that
HODL.
term?
So HODL.
No,
Oh,
look,
Greg, go ahead and
it's
explain
spelled out of
HODL.
the word hold, right? And I actually I forget exactly where it comes from, but somebody tweeted it once early on, and it was just a typo. But then the industry sort of latched onto it, so it sort of means, you're never selling, or you're long and strong Bitcoin. HODL, HODL. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of a joke. Like it's kind of a joke. Like Dogecoin was supposed to be Dog E coin, but
Yeah.
then people started calling it Dogecoin.
A lot of
There's a
inside
lot of
jokes.
like sarcastic kind of inside joke kind of things going on in the world of crypto. But Greg, you're a serious guy. You're a serious investor. How did you go from buying this one Bitcoin on Coinbase to being the founder and CEO Osprey Funds? Not only that, you have started up a number of other funds that have been bought out and things like that. Talk to me about your career
So
trajectory.
my sort of day job at the time in 2013 was I'd been involved in creating fund products on Wall Street, mainly ETFs and ETNs, all manner of ticker-based exchange-traded investment funds. And 2013 was the same year that you maybe remember this, the Winklevoss twins filed for an ETF. They actually filed 8 years ago now. Still no Bitcoin ETF. Yeah, they're still
Yeah,
trying,
they're still trying to get that
I think
ETF.
they've managed to do some other stuff in the meantime. I think, they own over 1% of all the Bitcoin, which just hit $1 trillion. So, you do the math. But no Bitcoin ETF yet. But at the time, of course, none of us knew that it was going to take this long. So 2 years later, in 2015, the regulators said, "Hey, Bitcoin is a commodity." And actually, that's what I'd been doing, was putting commodities into funds. Which, if you know anything about the US regulations, we have a lot of agencies. They regulate a lot of different areas. In other countries, it tends to be one regulator, but here we have a special agency for securities, that's the SEC, for commodities, that's the CFTC, and for currencies, that's the OCC. And so at the time, nobody knew, hey, is Bitcoin a security? Is it a commodity? Is it a bird? Is it a plane? That kind of thing. And once someone stepped up, no, not directly. I mean, it's a little bit complicated. There's a little overlap, and they tend to collaborate slash, bicker with each other a little bit, the agencies. But strictly speaking, the SEC is not the regulator for most commodities. Yeah. So once that had been kind of identified, that's when I stepped in 2016 and 17, and we actually pursued a couple of Bitcoin ETF filings. And became clear that that wasn't going to happen anytime soon. So we moved to a different structure, which is the Osprey Bitcoin Trust that we just recently launched, under the ticker OBTC.
Yes, and tell me about that, because that's you led me right to my next question, the Osprey Bitcoin Trust. What is it? How does it work? How is it different than an
Yeah,
ETF?
so
How is it
the
similar?
idea here is, there are a ton of ways to get exposure to crypto, right? You can buy it on your phone. I bought some on PayPal on my phone the other day, and that's great. But a lot of long-term investors have money saved in their brokerage accounts or their IRAs, right? And you don't really want to pull assets out of those systems and kind of wire them to, you know, to a wallet or something. And especially if you think about the older generations, right, that may be catching on to crypto as an investment, but not necessarily as
tech-savvy. Well, look, man, so right now is an interesting time because, like, I have my buddy from high school just called me up. He's like, hey, man, you think I should be investing in crypto? Or, you know, I got my uncle calling me. Hey, Dion, what do you think about this crypto? Obviously, you are a believer. You're an investor. Talk to me about how you first got started with crypto investing and where the landscape is right now.
NAV, the fair value of the underlying basket. But because there's limited supply with these products, you get this secondary dynamic where the premium can get really big and then it can come in. And so investors need to be a little careful about their timing of when they buy.
And so wait, that's the deal with your product?
That's the deal with our product, but also more famously Grayscale's product. Grayscale is a company that first launched a product like this several years back. We're the second player. If you can imagine, they've been the only game in town for 6 years. They've got $30 billion in their fund. It's fairly expensive. So we came in at a much lower price point. We actually custody our coins with Fidelity, which is, you know, old traditional finance, a very large asset management firm based in Boston. And so in that sense, we feel investors are maybe a little more comfortable with our fund.
So the question I would have, though, is Bitcoin already is this really hyper-volatile asset. And I would think that an asset that was going to be for investors would be less volatile. But it seems like your product actually adds volatility to that. Am I understanding that correctly?
So because of the secondary market dynamics, it can be more volatile. It's not guaranteed to be more volatile. It could be less. But it's just not necessarily going to track perfectly with Bitcoin. Over the long term, though, both, you know, I would expect that both our product and Bitcoin dampen down as far as volatility goes. The reason for the volatility makes perfect sense in markets. It's just because there's a lot of appreciation that's been happening. And when that happens, you have people taking money, you know, off the, putting money in off the sidelines and then taking money off the table constantly. Because people have different, targets, I guess, that they're shooting for. For example, Bitcoin was at 20,000 in November, right? That was its previous all-time high. When it passed through that, that was big news, and everyone's kind of, hey, is it going to hit 30,000? Is it going to hit 40? We're over 50 today, right? And it's been less than 3 months. For a lot of people, you know, that 150% return is just absolutely huge. So you see these drawdowns of 25-30%. And that's normal in this disruptive technology environment, which is what we think when we think of Bitcoin. We think of it as a technology.
Interesting. I know how much you love crypto.
Here's the thing. And again, you know, people are making money with it. I've said this all along. I don't begrudge people making money. That's awesome. What trips me out about crypto is I haven't heard a single person explain it to me in a way that I can understand it. And I'm sure you would agree with me on this. Like in Bloomberg the other day, the headline read something like crypto exploding in value. People still have no idea how it works. And it's just, I've never seen, I'm serious. Like that was the headline. It was crazy. So I've just never seen something where it's like, I don't know, like take a Facebook, for instance. I think it's pretty clear how Facebook makes money. It makes sense. You know, because they get advertising in the marketplace or whatever. I have watched two documentaries on the crypto. I try to keep myself two. And I still would not even consider myself a novice when it comes to crypto. And that kind of sketches me out a little bit. I mean, do you have anything you can say to that or just?
No.
Am I just that dumb?
It is. It is a bit complicated, I think, at a high level. And when you're using the word crypto, right? There are thousands of coins and tokens at this point. And they're all different. But so I find it's helpful to just kind of reduce it down to Bitcoin in particular, because it's the biggest, it's the first. Bitcoin is,
Does your fund deal in any other crypto or just Bitcoin?
We have a number of additional funds planned that would be beyond just Bitcoin, but this one is Bitcoin only.
Okay, but you have them planned.
Exist.
They're
yeah.
not. They don't exist yeah. right now.
So yeah, no worries. No
okay,
worries.
Gotcha. Sorry. Go ahead.
You know, if anyone cares, you can go to OspreyFunds.io and sign up for the newsletter, and then you'll be the first to know about new funds. But you know, Bitcoin. What Bitcoin is, I think, is a it's turning into a digital store of wealth, right? So it's a place to park capital. Just remember, like, dollars are just a unit of account. We're just measuring value. You know, that, you know, if you work for a certain amount of time, it's worth this much value. If you have a building, it's worth that much value. But the dollars are just a measure of the value. It's the same thing with Bitcoin. The difference is that Bitcoin is like a currency that's been issued by a foreign country that is governed by nobody except the protocol, the software itself. And so people are starting to lean into it and trust it as something that is achieving a level of permanence. And the more people that do that, you have what's called a network effect, right? The value that that piles into it because of its utility to exchange value back and forth just creates, kind of by definition, value for each of the 21 million Bitcoin. A lot of people say, hey, there's no intrinsic value. It's kind of a scam. But the reality is that if all of us decided tomorrow, we're not going to accept those little, you know, green pieces of paper with numbers printed on them that say, you know, U.S. government, we're just not going to accept that. Then the dollar goes to zero, right? So you have to have this crowd buy-in, right? So and then that creates the value.
No, for sure. I totally get that. But now here's my question. That's actually a great point. But my question is, do you think people are really investing in it then just as a store of wealth? Because in this documentary I saw, like, somewhere in Berlin, Germany, they let you pay for stuff with Bitcoin. So, like, is that something that you think will ever take off or no?
The premise of Bitcoin, they wanted it to be a sort of a substitute for cash. The problem has been that Bitcoin's transactions per minute are very low that the system can handle. So it's not really set up. Yeah,
I saw that in the documentary too. That's been like a project. It takes hours to go through.
So that part of the equation is kind of to be determined, but as a more permanent store of value, think of it like the difference between maybe a checking account where you're kind of coming in and out, going back and forth versus a savings account. Bitcoin is kind of taking on more of the global role of a savings account. And if you're a person, a saver, or an institution, or even a government, and you want to lock away a chunk of value, $1 million or $1 billion or something, into almost like a savings account, you can use Bitcoin as that digital locker to do so, so long as you feel like it's widely accepted, which at this point I think it is.
Greg, that just is so crazy to me, right? Not to say that it's wrong or right, but what's crazy about it is just the way that it's fluctuated. Because if my savings account, right, if I had put $1,000 in my savings account in November, and then I look at it and I've now got $2,500 in my savings account today, I'd be excited, but I'd also have questions. You know, I'd be like, wait, this doesn't seem right. Or if conversely, I had put $1,000 in my savings account in November of 2017, and then I check it in June of 2018, and now I've got $300, I would be very concerned. This savings account would not be doing what I intended for it to do. So it's very interesting to me that one of the big premises now for Bitcoin is this idea that it's replacing savings accounts. Obviously, savings accounts have failed us,
yeah,
right? Because you're not earning any interest. The idea of compound interest is doesn't exist anymore, certainly in the US, but really globally. But it is strange to me that Bitcoin, this thing that, as we've talked about, has this incredibly high volatility that fluctuates as an asset price so much, and that is, you know, it's unregulated and it's unknown in terms of where it's going to go or what it's going to be, is thought of now as a savings account. I just find that fascinating because it has none of the traditional pieces or, you know, features.
Yeah,
of a savings
I totally
account.
Hear what you're saying. And just to be clear, I'm not saying it's as safe as a savings account by any stretch. But what I am saying is, like, in the kind of global push for a digital solution that is not married to a particular country, right? It's not a U.S. solution backed by the U.S. government. It's not a Chinese solution backed by China. It is, you know, sovereign unto itself. Bitcoin has come along and created something via the original white paper and the software and the whole ecosystem of Bitcoin, where you have thousands of different computers validating every single transaction. They've created a safe system, basically, that people can now trust and lean into and store value there. The problem is, and here it is if you think of it like an exchange rate, right? So I've lived in a couple foreign countries. When you're in that country, you don't care what the, you don't care what's happening with the exchange rate of other countries. You just care about that, you know, those Australian dollars, let's say. It's just when you're moving in and out, right? So if there was a country that just ran on Bitcoin, all those people would be like, we don't see any fluctuation. It's just my one Bitcoin can now buy a lot more than it used to, as opposed to the dollar, which has gone the other way around, right? If you put your entire year's worth of earnings in 1921 under your mattress and then got it out 100 years later now at 2021, it would be pathetic, right? You couldn't buy anything. The opposite is happening for the people who live in the land.
Yeah, you buy a lot less stuff.
Right, they saved a day's worth of earnings and now it's equal to a year's worth of earnings, right? So it's going the other way around. And that's just happening as a one-off over a decade and a half, as the whole world sort of says, wait, this is actually working. Let's use Bitcoin. They have to pile in a one-way sort of trade for a little while, and that's not going to last forever. It's the S-curve of technological adoption, right? Early adopters, and then it goes into a hockey stick, and then it eventually plateaus. Eventually, Bitcoin will be, you know, as boring as gold, basically.
All right. Well, one thing, actually, on that note, I didn't know
come
this.
Back
then.
To gold.
Yeah, the Bitcoin value, it never shuts off, right? Like the like, you know, like with Wall Street, where like there's like the trading hours.
Right.
It's 24/7. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yep.
So then, how does that work for your fund? Basically, does that? Does your fund
Our
trade
fund
the same
only
way?
Trades once per day. We only need to buy units, new Bitcoin, if we get new investors. So we're only doing that once per day. So it's pretty straightforward. Our fund is very basic buy and hold passive vehicle. It's just designed to give people an easy way to access Bitcoin in their brokerage or IRA account. So if you're running a hedge fund and you're doing active trading, you need to worry about that, right? There's no going home. You can't clock out. You know, Bitcoin doesn't sleep. So, yeah.
Yeah, I just found that out. I didn't know that. Did you know that, Dion? Or?
I did know that, yeah. But Greg, really quickly, because I think I spoke with the mayor of Miami last week. He's one of these guys. He's talking about paying workers in Bitcoin, accepting people's parking ticket payments in Bitcoin, maybe putting some of the city's reserves in Bitcoin. Obviously, Tesla has done that, has put some of its reserves in Bitcoin. And I assume they're going to be using things like the Osprey Bitcoin Trust, because you can't just, you know, have Bitcoin where the price is one thing one minute, the price is one thing another minute. Is that something that is a use for your fund? Is that something that you're
doing
with that?
We have institutional investors looking into the fund and purchasing units. But so I don't know if you mean like the city of Miami in particular. But in terms of like payments being made in Bitcoin, that's really not going to be affected by our fund. Our fund is just simply a way that investors can allocate to the space, because some people want to use Bitcoin and settle transactions. Others people just realize that it's a growing ecosystem and they want the benefits of that growth in their portfolio. So what's the easiest way to get it into my, you know, stock, retirement, you know, long-term portfolio? That's what we're focused on.
So your trust and Grayscale's trust wouldn't be used by governments or companies as a way to facilitate
Bitcoin transactions, but yes, to invest their own account for the long term. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Very last question I want to ask you before I let you go is just about gold. There's been all this talk about Bitcoin versus gold, and you know, no one's ever sure where gold fit in a portfolio, but you could always say, yeah, maybe you should have a little gold in your portfolio to hedge for this dollar risk, these kind of things that you've been talking about. Now people are saying that about Bitcoin. Where does Bitcoin fit in the portfolio? Does it completely replace gold? Do we need to not buy gold anymore?
I still like gold personally. I mean, I think it has a role in the portfolio. I think Bitcoin does too, though, and increasingly so. You know, the numbers right now are roughly 1 trillion Bitcoin market cap to 10 trillion, you know, gold outstanding in the world. So it's still, one-tenth the size of gold. People are talking about, is it going to get to the same size? Is it going to pass the size of gold? I'm not sure. I sort of think of it in terms of them kind of pulling even. I think that would be a big milestone for the industry. But I think there's a role for both. You know, it's sort of you got old school gold and you got new school gold, you know, and you might as well have.
What percentage of the portfolio should it be? Should Bitcoin be, and what percentage should gold be?
Everybody's kind of got to decide for themselves because people have different risk tolerance and time. You know, you might be 25 years old, you might be 65 years old, and that's a different story. But, you know, by and large, we see advisors recommending to their clients, 1 to 3% of each. So personally, I allocate more towards Bitcoin. I held gold for a long time. I think Bitcoin's much more exciting. And, you know, I hold a lot more Bitcoin than I do gold.
What? Yep. How much Bitcoin are you holding right now, Greg? What percentage of your portfolio is in Bitcoin, Greg? Tell us.
But I'm not crazy. It's not 100% or even close to that. But it's double digits. It's double digits.
Is it 50%?
It's not that high. It's double digits, though.
Okay. All right. Greg King, founder and CEO of Osprey Funds.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much for being with us, Greg. This is a great conversation.
And that was our interview with Greg King, CEO and founder of Osprey Funds. Dan, I'm a little disappointed because you're in such a good mood that you didn't even hate on Bitcoin. You kind of jumped in with a couple questions, but I expected you to be way more of a hater.
Well, I guess actually the way he described it, now it kind of makes a little more sense. So basically, if I understood him, it's like, people buy gold not because they think they're ever going to take gold and use it for anything. They just buy it to store their money in gold. If the world crashes or whatever, they own gold, I guess.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Gold will always be worth something is the idea.
Yeah, that makes a lot more sense. But I guess where I get confused is that, like, you know, he struck me as like the logical side of crypto, if that makes sense. Every other guy I meet in crypto is like some, you know, Looney Tune that's like living under a rock that, you know, I wouldn't trust mowing my lawn, let alone, you know, with my money. You know? So I think, but like other people that you meet on the street in these crypto circles that I somehow find myself in.
Yeah, how are you finding yourself on the street in crypto circles?
I think being crypto is now like how veganism was like 10 years ago. Vegans were just like always talking about it. And it wasn't just diet. It's about the earth and blah, blah, blah. And again, totally fine. But it's like they're so vocal now. Like, you know, like in that documentary I watched when they were like, you know, Bitcoin, if you're not into Bitcoin, you don't like freedom. It's a human right. It's a human rights
issue.
You don't like freedom. Yeah, it's like it's really like the reverse of like the Colin Kaepernick stuff with the kneeling. Like he was kneeling to like say something, but people said, "Oh, kneeling, you know, if you kneel then blah blah, you know," like people just took it. People took it to this like crazy extreme that it may not have been meant for. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
So
right.
Yeah.
And this is the opposite of that where they're
yes,
they're taking a thing that's not really anything.
Yeah, exactly. And they're putting way too much like stuff on it, basically, whereas it just is what it is. So I guess that's where I was always getting confused because, like I said in that documentary, people are paying for stuff in Berlin with crypto and coffee shops are now accepting crypto and stuff like that. So I always thought of it. I've heard some people say it's the future of how we're going to pay for stuff. But it sounds like with this guy, he's looking at it as, no, it's just like another place to hold your money.
Well, I think the big difference is, and this is one thing Greg was pointing out, was like crypto versus Bitcoin. Like Bitcoin is a type of crypto, but all crypto is not Bitcoin. So maybe Bitcoin is what we use.
We probably mean Bitcoin because that's the safest or the most
well-known. Well, right. But
yeah.
So what Greg is saying is like there's crypto, which is just the store of asset and people hodl. I'm glad you learned about hodling today.
Hodling, yeah.
Yeah, and people hodl, they hold the Bitcoin.
but maybe something like Ripple or something like, not Dogecoin because Dogecoin is worthless, but like, you know, one of these other cryptocurrencies will be what we use to pay for things, right? Because Ripple is worth like 5 cents a coin or something like that. Or, you know, maybe something like Ethereum or one of these other cryptocurrencies that's out there. That'll be how we pay. And then we'll also just put our money as a store of value in Bitcoin. Right. And maybe we'll invest in one of the other cryptocurrencies. So that's the world of crypto is evolving. I am, you know, a bit skeptical and not of the idea that this is a place where you can put your money, but just that it is a good place to put your money. Just because, unlike gold, like gold will always have value because gold has had value for thousands and thousands of years.
Yeah. That was how people defined being rich, you know, centuries ago.
Right.
How
much gold And it was always like, oh yeah, you got that gold stuff. Whereas this is just new, and at any point, I feel like the authorities out there, like Janet Yellen, the Treasury Secretary, has already said she thinks this is bad stuff, bad voodoo. And if the government wants to say you can't hold cryptocurrency, well, that's really going to just tank the value of it or something like that. Like, there's a million different things that could tank the value. It could just tank like it tanked at the end of 2017, you know, and no one really knows why. So it just, to me, you never saw gold tank like that. You never saw silver tank like that, even though they have tanked and really gone down, but never 20,000 to 3,000 over the course of a few months. So anyway, that's my thing. But Greg King, obviously a smart guy, other take, and he's got the funds. If you want to invest in crypto, then maybe his Bitcoin trust is where you want to go do it.
Yeah. He seemed like a Bitcoin realist. I don't know what we can call him, but just like a Bitcoin, I don't know, like a trustworthy Bitcoin guy, which I thought was an
oxymoron. Wow. Still, even in a good mood, disrespectful to Bitcoin.
I just have a, I still don't. If I understood it more, if I had a great understanding of how it worked, I would be more into it. I just am not into it. That's really what it is. Because I'm dumb. That's what it is.
Okay, I'm sure that's what people watching the show who are like Bitcoin enthusiasts are saying anyway. So that's good that you and them, you're on the same page. Real quick before we end the show, I just want to close with this note about, I talked a little bit about central banks before we started, and I want to kind of just bring that home about what's happening with the central banks. So right now, the Fed, the Federal Reserve, the central bank of the U.S., has said we want inflation to be higher than 2% for a while because it's been lower than 2% for a while, and that's got inflation expectations going through the roof. The global price of food is the highest it's been in about 6-7 years. Expectations for inflation over the next 5 years are at the highest they've been in 10 years. You've got the value of mortgages is the highest it's been in about a year, the price of mortgages. Gas prices are going up, highest in a year, things like that. So all these things, the prices are going up. And it's because the Fed has said that they want inflation, and the Fed essentially controls the treasury market because they're buying so much of them that individual investors or even institutions buying or selling a lot of them isn't going to move the market all that much. You have to go with what the Fed wants. And so investors have seen, okay, the Fed wants higher inflation. That means inflation is going to go higher. We should sell these treasury bonds because they're not going to be worth as much in, you know, a month, a week, a year, as they are right now. So let's sell out of them. That's raising the price on mortgages. The cost of mortgages are going up, auto loans, credit cards, because all of those things are pegged to the 10-year treasury yield. And so, what's been happening,
are pegged to the 10-year treasury yield.
Exactly. So what's been happening initially, Jerome Powell, who's the chair of the Fed, said, hey, you know what? That's fine. These interest rates rising is just a signal of the economy getting better. And we like that. That's a good thing. And then all of a sudden, on Friday night in Japan, Haruhiko Kuroda, who is the governor of the Bank of Japan, said, no, we don't like these rising interest rates. They are a problem because we have yield curve control. And we can't let rates get above where they are right now. And that was important because Haruhiko Kuroda is actually the leader, the unofficial leader of central banks. He's the last old school, you know, macroeconomist. he's the last of the old guard from the Janet Yellen, Mario Draghi phase, when you had these guys who were old world, 50-year central bankers. A lot of people don't know the Fed chairman is a lawyer by trade and a private equity guy. He's not a trained macroeconomist. The president of the European Central Bank, which is the other big one, she is not a trained macroeconomist. She is a lawyer by trade, a politician. So when people are looking to see, okay, what should we do next? They're looking to Haruhiko Kuroda. And when he said, hey, enough of this, the whole game changed. Because he's kind of the, like I said, he's sort of the unofficial or the titular leader of the central banks. Everyone kind of looks to him. And ever since that happened, the ECB has now come out and said, oh, you know, we need to stop these yields going up as well. And you had two people from the Fed, Fed Governor Lael Brainard, who's part of the inner circle, right? There's like four people who are part of the Fed inner circle. She came out and said she was worried about the rate at which bond yields are going up, which was a change from what Powell said. Then you had San Francisco Fed President Mary Daly say kind of the same thing. And then you had, I think it was Barkin today, or Evans, no, it was Charles Evans today, came out and said, if yields keep going up, we're going to take action. That means the Fed is going to take action. Likely, we'll have to wait till we hear from Jerome Powell.
So basically, with the Japanese guy, he has no direct say on what the U.S. government does, but it's like an influence thing, basically, where they all kind of
Like an influencer. Right. He's like an influencer. Right. You know, if Kylie Jenner does something, then, right, you know, all the other influencers.
He's the Kylie Jenner. He's the Kylie Jenner of economists.
he's the Kylie Jenner of central bankers. Exactly.
Did you see what Kuroda posted last night? Oh my God, the yield curve.
Kuroda, not Kuroda. That was basically what it was. And then everybody started kind of changing their tune. And it's been fascinating to watch over, like, it was like a ripple effect from that Friday. And I've been writing about it every day this week in the Axios Markets newsletter, just about, okay, that happened, now watch this. Oh, that happened, now watch this. And so we get Powell today on Thursday. He's going to be talking at the symposium. And we're going to watch and see if he comes out and says, yeah, you know, the yield curve has really been rising. The 10-year yield, it's getting a little out of hand, a little out of control. And if he says that, which I'm expecting him to do because Lael Brainard, who's in the inner circle, said it, I think that's going to send 10-year rates down pretty significantly. But, you know, I'm not a prognosticator.
That's not a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing, no. I mean, it just, because the yields going up has been really bad for the NASDAQ. If you've been watching the NASDAQ, NASDAQ has been tanking, just absolutely getting crushed. And it's kind of dragging the rest of the stock market with it, because the NASDAQ is the big tech companies, and the big tech companies make up the majority of the S&P 500 just by market cap, because they're so huge. So it could be good for the stock market. I wrote about today how it's kind of the Fed doing a low-key stimulus in disguise, because it's going to bring mortgage rates down. It's going to bring auto loan rates down. It's going to bring credit card rates down. And all of those things have been weak to start the year. So in addition to kind of helping out the stock market, it's also going to bring all those things down and help out the economy, which supposedly does need help, but the Fed's probably going to give it some help, because that's what they do. Because we don't have a real economy anymore.
That's right.
So, yeah. There you go. I have been saying that. Anyway, that's going to do it for Market Banter. Dan, unless you got anything to say.
This is one of our best shows that we ever did.
Yeah. This was the best show we've ever done.
I don't know how we're going to top it. I'm worried about it.
That's what we have the week for. I want to thank everybody for tuning in, watching us here on Market Banter. For Dan Enfield, New York City comedian and working stiff, I am Dion Rabowan. I was going to say markets editor, but financial reporter, markets editor, writer of the Axios Markets newsletter. Thanks for tuning into Market Banter. We'll catch you next week.